Hello, and welcome to our NABBW teleseminar for May 31st, 2012. In a moment, I will introduce our guest, Dr. Tara Allman, MD, and we will start our discussion on menopause. But first, let me introduce myself and set the stage. Everything okay?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. In a moment, I'm going to start by telling you that I'm Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, found online at www.nabbw.com, and we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found as a major search engines when you search on the keywords Baby Boomer Women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, you can join us via the handy link on the front page of the NABBW site. Now, this call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have recordings of approximately 70 past teleseminars, which are yours with membership in NABBW. You won't see them on the website unless you're a member, however, because they're kept in the members-only area. So let me tell you a little bit about the format of the call today. Please get comfortable and make sure that you have something to drink because hydration is always important, as Dr. Allman is going to tell us, I'm sure. And you might want to have paper and pen to take notes because the topics that we're going to cover are fascinating and important, and I know that you'll want to remember what you heard after the call. So for the next 30 or 40 minutes, I'll have the phone lines muted, and Dr. Allman and I will be talking. After that, I will open the lines for questions from the audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, just use the box on your computer screen to type in your questions. I'll see them as they come in, and I'll relay them to Dr. Allman. In a minute, I will give you some background on today's guest, and then she and I will spend about 45 minutes, as I said, discussing some medically sound, up-to-date information regarding this important time in our lives. So let's get started. First of all, of course, the first thing I need to do is tell you a little bit about our guest, Tara Allman, MD. Dr. Tara Allman is one of America's leading experts on menopausal medicine. She is a nationally certified menopause practitioner and highly respected in the medical community. After earning her bachelor's degree from Johns Hopkins University and her medical degree from the State University of New York at Stony Brook, she completed a residency in obstetrics and gynecology at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Allman started her professional career in a private obstetrical practice, but ultimately decided to follow her passion for menopausal medicine. She joined Columbia Presbyterian Center for Menopause, Hormonal Disorders and Women's Health in 1999, focusing her practice on perimenopause and menopause. In the last decade, Dr. Allman has educated thousands of medical professionals around the country on menopausal medicine. She has also been featured on television, both in the United States and internationally. In fact, you may have caught one of her guest appearances on The Dr. Oz Show, Good Morning America, CBS News, or the Fox Channel's Headline Health. In 2006, Dr. Allman established the Allman Foundation, a nonprofit organization. The foundation supports causes that primarily involve women's health, childhood education, and animal welfare. The North American Menopause Society, the leading nonprofit organization dedicated to menopausal women's health, refers to Dr. Allman as a visionary contributor. Having identified the frustrations of many women regarding getting objective, scientifically based advice on menopause or access to professionals who specialize in menopausal medicine, Dr. Allman created her DVD, Menopause in an Hour, An Appointment with Dr. Tara Allman, MD. And we'll have more on that later. In fact, several of you will be able to receive a copy of it if you sign up in the spot on the where the Q&A part is on the sign-up box. The first 10 people to sign up will be gifted with a copy of it, which is a wonderful thing. I've seen the DVD, and it's excellent. Now, let me finish my bio here. Dr. Allman lives in New York City with her husband, Lawrence M. Kimmel, their two children, and a small dog named Sadie. Please help me welcome Dr. Tara Allman.
Yay!
Before I launch into my questions, Dr. Ullman, why don't I give you a brief opportunity to say something about what led you to create that DVD, Menopause in an Hour, An Appointment with Tara Ullman, MD?
Well, as you said, I practice in Manhattan, New York City, and this is a smart town with smart women, and it was always so surprising to me that when they finally found me, an expert in menopause, it was like having an Oprah aha moment. They thought, we didn't know someone like you existed. We have been going to our obstetrician gynecologists trying to get answers for our perimenopause and menopause issues, and we can't find them there. We didn't know there was a specialty. And I thought, golly, if women in Manhattan can't find a person, then women all over the country may be struggling too. Let me put all the information clearly and succinctly in a DVD so that no matter where you are, you can watch in 1 hour and become as smart as your obstetrician gynecologist, and likely smarter, frankly, because it's going to be tailored to your personal journey and your options and your choices. And this actually leads me to a very important point for your listeners. Many women continue to go to their obstetrician gynecologists long after they have made their babies. Mm-hmm. It is the wrong person to take you through this part of your journey. You need to graduate from the obstetrician's office, and you need to seek out a gynecologist only, someone who no longer delivers babies. That is the right person who's going to help you with this next part of your journey, which, by the way, we will spend one-third of our lives as menopausal women, over 30 years. So you want to make the best choices for you right at the beginning with the best person who's going to help you make those choices. So all your listeners, when they're done with listening to you, will be able to go to the best website and never need to surf around the internet again. They will go to menopause.org, O-R-G, and that is the North American Menopause Society's website, where on it will be a list of credentialed menopause experts. And if you put in your zip code or your town, you hopefully somebody smart will pop up, and you will be able to find somebody in your neck of the woods. And if there isn't somebody in your neck of the woods, then at least what you need to do is seek out in your community someone who just practices gynecology and ask them if menopause is a topic of great passion for them. You really want to find someone who's interested and excited and knows all of the nuances of this next important mm-hmm. part of your life.
Oh, I can certainly see that would make sense. I know that my practitioner that I see is a woman of my age, and I primarily have been seeing her because I have diabetes, and she has diabetes, so I know that I have a person who's speaking not only to me as a patient but as a fellow person who understands what that journey is like. So I can see how finding a person who is also an expert in menopause would be that same kind of a wonderful situation. And I didn't know that your specialty...
And you probably didn't know they existed either.
I didn't.
And here's the other point. When you're done making babies, you don't want to be sitting in an office where the doctor has to rush off and deliver babies, and you're surrounded mm-hmm. by, you know, 20-something, 30-something pregnant women with newborns. That is actually not the right environment for you anymore. So this is, again, this is the start-off point for your listeners to know how they're going to get the right information, so when they're done listening to you, they're going to march off to menopause.org and start their homework assignment.
Excellent. I'm so glad that you gave us that website. Now, I know that we have a lot of questions that I'd like to cover here in our time, so why don't I start with the first question, and as I said, we'll go through them, and then we'll get to the point where we can have some questions from the audience, and I've already seen that some questions will be coming on my panel, so we'll have plenty of good questions here, I think. But let's start by defining, what is the difference between perimenopause and menopause?
Well, the easier definition is menopause. That is when our ovaries are all done with their jobs. We have no eggs left to ovulate. We no longer make estrogen. And we will do that on average for most of us. The average age is about 51. Some of us will do it sooner, some of us will do it later. But before we have stopped our periods completely, there is a period of time leading up to that. It's called perimenopause. That usually happens in our 40s. It can last about 4 to 8 years. We are still making estrogen. Our ovaries still are working, but just erratically, undependably, unreliably. Our periods are changing. So our hormonal output, our estrogen output is either too high, too low, or normal. I want you to envision being on a hormonal roller coaster ride. And it is fraught with as many symptoms as menopause is. Flashes and sweats and fractured sleep and mood issues and brain issues and sexual function issues and depression and so forth. So these women, usually in their 40s, honestly have no idea as they're approaching their menopause what's going on. What I hear from many of them is, am I crazy? I don't feel right anymore. And they are not to be treated as menopausal women. Perimenopause has a different physiology and therefore a different treatment. And menopause, when your ovaries are all done, no more estrogen, you are, again, in a different category, and the treatment would be different. So those are two separate kinds of transitions, and the best time to learn about both of them is probably in your early 40s before you become symptomatic. So this way you have a nice, clear thinking head so you can absorb the information. It's a good time to get your menopause in an hour DVD.
All right. Well, you just answered my next question. I was going to say, when is the best time to learn about this? And so you said before it starts happening.
100%. Now, women don't know about this concept. You know, that's another, aha moment. When your periods start changing, it signals to you that your ovarian function is beginning its wind down. Mm-hmm. The ovaries have one job. They ovulate eggs. If we can get them pregnant, that's a good thing for ovaries. If we don't, we have menstrual periods. And at some point, we run out of eggs. So when this is happening in our 40s, we're running out of cycles. Our cycles are either becoming shorter or longer or heavier or lighter, or we're skipping them. And this is the signal to you now, okay, I better start learning about what is my life going to look like when I no longer make estrogen. Things that we need to be concerned about when we no longer make estrogen, which is menopause, heart disease, bone health, osteoporosis, sexual health, brain health, mood health. There are a lot of things that are going to go downhill, frankly, when we stop making estrogen. So we better learn what those issues are, and we better learn what strategies we have to improve our health, which is ultimately all that we're trying to achieve in the last one-third of our life, is the best health we can for the last 30 or more years of our lives.
Oh, and that's such an excellent thing that to realize how much of our lives it impacts. I was talking with one of my NABBW has experts in different fields that are of interest to baby boomer aged women, and one of my experts is an expert on finance. I was talking to her yesterday. We were strategizing on some calls that we're going to be doing in the future, and I was telling her that we were doing this call tomorrow, and she was saying, well, I can tell you how you can bridge my area of interest and menopause. And then she proceeded to tell me about one of her clients who had been in a corporate position where she was making six figures a year, and she went into probably the perimenopause period of her life without really knowing what was going on, started to experience those mood swings. She got upset with people at work, and she just said, I quit, and stormed out. And now it's 2 years later, and she hasn't had a job.
Exactly. Right. Now, if she had been informed about why she was feeling so miserable, she could mm-hmm. have gotten the right help, and she, you know, if she still wanted to have that job. But the bigger picture and the bigger issue for women is, let's get educated. It's always so surprising to me that smart women have no idea about this topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, where would you say would be the best person or the best website for us to go to get accurate information? Now, you mentioned menopause.org.
I would say either menopause.org, which is, you don't need to surf the internet endlessly and for hours Googling menopause. Just march over to menopause.org, where you will get the most scientifically accurate information on every topic imaginable on this subject. Or you can get menopause in an hour and watch it for an hour. And it comes with a booklet that really, you know, I try to make things easy to understand and clear. So, you know, we're very busy women in our 40s and our early 50s. You know, not only are we perimenopausal and menopausal, but we do have jobs and we do have children and we do have households, and we don't have a lot of time. So in an hour you can get smart, and with your thin booklet you can get smarter, and then you're going to either try to find a credentialed menopausal expert in your community, or you're going to find a gynecologist only who really has spent the time to understand all the nuances of this transition. So, again, it's a little bit of work to find the right person, but the right person is out there.
Mm-hmm. Are there more and more of these people available? Because I'm thinking about the fact that us baby boomers, there are so many of us, you know, in this phase of our lives.
I can't wait to tell you how many there are. There's more than 50 million women at the moment who mm-hmm. are transitioning, who are menopausal women, 50 million and counting. Mm-hmm. It has really grown, this interest in us, and I am a perimenopausal woman. In fact, I'm very proud to say that I'm born in the last month of the last year of the baby boomers, so I just squeak in as a boomer.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yay.
And in the last, I would say, 10 or 15 years, our group is getting much more attention. You know, why did you really never hear about it from your mother or your grandmother? Because, you know, during that time, during their generation, nobody talked about menopause, nobody talked about hot flashes, nobody talked about osteoporosis. They all experienced it. Nobody
but
talked
they
about
it. The change.
And you know, the change, and you just were kind of quiet about that.
Right.
And we have become a lot smarter watching our grandmothers and our mothers grow older as to what happens to those women when they face 30 years without estrogen, for instance. Now, I'm not suggesting everyone needs estrogen, but I am suggesting that, you know, it's a new day, and there's
mm-hmm.
better information that our grandmothers and our mothers had, and let's get that good information, and let's do something about it.
All right. Well, maybe we should talk a little bit now about what are some of the common symptoms we should probably break it up into perimenopause and then menopause.
Perimenopause and menopause actually have a lot of similar symptoms. With the perimenopausal woman, she's still having cycles, but irregular, you know, not like her once a month or every 28 days or 26 days or 25 days, but maybe they're coming every 2 weeks, maybe they're coming every 3 months, maybe they're very heavy, maybe they're very light. So she's going to experience this hormonal roller coaster ride, and as a result, she will have hot flashes, night sweats, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, feeling low on energy, very poor sleep, reduced libido or no libido,
mm-hmm.
terrible cognitive function. She won't be able to focus, concentrate, recall words, won't be as sharp as she used to be, and will be dismayed by that, right? Just like the gal who, you know, transitioned out of that job because at some point she just couldn't do her job as well, and the mood symptomatology got in her way. The same symptoms are the same for menopause. The reason behind it is different. The menopausal woman is not making any estrogen, whereas the perimenopausal woman is swinging all over the place with her estrogen. But as we are menopausal now without estrogen, let's add to our list of troubles heart disease, which is the number one killer of women and should be the number one concern of women listening to your show, osteoporosis, which is a completely preventable disease of estrogen deficiency and its effect on bone and bone loss. And if we want to move to things like cognitive function, menopausal women will complain of the same things, difficulty to concentrate, focus, recall words, have a sense of well-being and energy. And there will also be issues of depression, anxiety, panic attacks, mood swings, things that you might have experienced as a younger woman, but they just get worse as a perimenopausal menopausal woman. Now, there could be a component of actual depression, or is it all just hormonal? There's a way to tease that out, and that's why you have to find somebody smart to help you.
All right. Well, I should
also mention, actually, you know, some less talked about symptoms, especially for the menopausal girl. But without estrogen, your skin will wrinkle, right? You'll get dry skin and wrinkly skin, and your hair will become coarser and finer and fall out. And your vagina will dry up. And whether you're sexually active or not is irrelevant to me. One should still have a healthy vagina, and if only we could get a television commercial that could say, the reason why we can't talk about vaginal health and solutions for women who are menopausal is because you cannot say the word vagina on television in certain parts of the country at certain times of the day. So we have to learn about our vaginas as they grow older from hopefully a smart gynecologist who's willing to tell you that when you face life without estrogen, your vagina will be affected. You'll be more prone to vaginal infections, more prone to bladder infections, more prone to irritation and inflammation due to the dryness. And there's just no need for that, right? We should have healthy vaginas whether we are sexually active women or we are not.
Well, if you can't say vagina in these certain parts of the country at certain time periods, then I guess we need to have the manufacturers of any things that could help us start thinking like the people who came up with ED instead
exactly,
of...
Exactly, right. We need another word, apparently, or right. We need to educate. This is a topic that women don't bring up in the gynecologist's office because they don't know to bring it up, or they're ashamed to bring it up, or their gynecologist is a man. And this is a topic that's one of the first topics that I bring up during one of my visits with a patient. So, you know, hopefully by word of mouth, woman to woman, we start talking about how important this part of our life is as well.
All right. Well, can we talk now a little bit about some non-medical solutions? Because I know from the fact that I have watched your DVD that you have interest in telling us about some non-medical solutions as well as some medical solutions. So let's
start with the first thing I want your listeners to do when they're done listening to you and tomorrow morning is it's really time to start making the correct choices regarding nutrition and exercise. So we have spent the majority of our lives in this country eating what we want and probably not exercising either at all or enough, and that can't fly anymore. When we hit this particular part of our lives, we really do have to stop eating the high-fat foods and start eating the fruits and vegetables and lean everything. And making water our beverage of choice is the right idea. I'm not saying that you can't have alcohol. I'm not saying that you can't have juice. But by the way, I do agree that you can't have soda. For all your soda drinkers out there, it just you can't have it anymore. That's the end of that. That's the end of that story. It's just not healthy for you. It's just adding calories to you. And start picking up water everywhere, and you will improve your health, your weight loss, your weight maintenance. And these are the easier things to do to help reduce some of our symptoms that we're going to experience. And, of course, women who are having hot flashes already know that they want to dress in cotton fabrics or wicking fabrics. They want to dress in layers so they can remove them. There are some foods that will help trigger some symptoms in some women, spicy foods, alcohol, caffeine. Women will know them when they experience them and then will practice avoidance behavior and not have those foods or beverages. You know, hot liquids sometimes, of course, will trigger hot flashes. So these are easy, simple strategies as you move forward in this transition. So I like to say to women, we have spent most of our lives putting everyone else first on the list, our children, our husbands, our parents, our households, our workplace. And now menopause is the time where you have to, first of all, get on your list and get yourself fairly close up to the number one spot. You don't have any more time to waste by not caring about your own health. So the non-medical strategies are to use your common sense and start making improvements in your nutrition and your exercise. And I'm not saying that you have to do it all correctly, you know, in the first week, but I am saying you better start making those choices and building upon them.
Excellent. I think that, well, I'm a reformed, my husband and I both are reformed soda drinkers, and I'm really
and what was the, and what was the thing that finally got you to stop drinking soda?
Oh, well, I think the first thing that was a problem for me is when I was pregnant with my first child, I had preeclamptic toxemia, so I had to reduce my salt. And when
right.
they started telling me that how much salt was in my favorite drink, which was Coke,
right.
you know, I was in my late 20s at that time, but I was very upset over the fact that I had to give up Coke because I thought it was a wonder beverage at that time.
Right.
But now I think,
right.
how could I have drunk that stuff?
Right, 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 right. And by the way, we suffer from obesity in this country, and there's no need for that either. And if you could just put the Coca-Cola aside and pick up a delicious cold glass of water,
mm-hmm.
you will see an improvement in that epidemic.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed on your DVD you talked about, you know, adding ice cubes or adding lemon or something like that. I do that. I think that
yep.
adding lemon or lime to my water makes it just a wonderful beverage. I really enjoy
Absolutely.
It.
So that, again, that is something easy, practical things that your listeners can do that they know to do. It's always surprising to me, Anne, that we women know to do this and yet we still don't do it. But the perimenopause time is the time, it's really the wake-up call. Now you've been putting it off, ladies, and that this is there's no more putting it off. Now is the time to get going with the right choices.
All right. Now, would you say that for a lot of women, just making some of these non-medical solutions can totally relieve their symptoms, or is that only
It's unlikely that you will totally relieve symptoms, but you can certainly improve how lousy you feel when you make some good lifestyle modifications, and you can certainly improve your health picture in the next 30 years, heart disease, colon cancer, Alzheimer's disease. All of these diseases will be improved, breast cancer. You can reduce risks by making these choices. So that's the first thing. But there will be a significant number of women who will experience hot flashes, probably more than 80% of us. You don't die from hot flashes, but for some of us, you can't get through the day. And you certainly don't want to quit your great job because every time you're giving an important speech or having a meeting, that you're breaking out into a sweat. And you're not sleeping all night because you're waking up sweating and you're tossing off your, you know, your bed sheets and you're taking
mm-hmm.
off your clothes. And so for 80% of us who are experiencing significant enough symptoms, that is the group that probably should consider using estrogen to improve those symptoms. And I don't want any of your listeners to be frightened about that great big study in 2002 called the Women's Health Initiative. It's been 10 years since that study came out that frightened all the symptomatic menopausal women from ever considering estrogen because they thought, oh, my God, I'll get breast cancer. And clearly 10 years later, calmer heads are prevailing. And we know that the younger menopausal woman, the late 40-something, the early 50-something woman who can't sleep through the night, who is flashing so many times in the day that it's very disruptive to her daily living, she is a good candidate for estrogen as long as she doesn't have any significant reasons she can't take estrogen. I'll give you a couple of those. If you've suffered a stroke, if you've
mm-hmm.
suffered a significant blood clot, that's not having varicose veins, ladies. That's having a significant blood clot that gets you hospitalized. If you have active breast cancer, I would say the majority of late 40-something, 50-something-year-old women do not fall into that category, and therefore the majority of us can use a low-dose estrogen therapy, and there are so many choices. This is where your smart gynecologist, who's either credentialed in menopausal medicine or has a real passion for it, is going to guide you, or my booklet in the DVD lists all your choices so that you're armed with information and you know what you can, what you should be taking and what you can be taking. And you don't need to be frightened. And we should cover the breast cancer issue. We'll do that in a minute. But I think I wanted to clarify for your listeners that it's the estrogen that our brain is requiring in order to feel better. I want to feel like myself again. I want to have energy again. I'd like to have a libido. I'd like to protect my bones from loss. I'd like to protect my heart from heart disease. I'd like to protect my colon from colon cancer. I'd like to protect my vision. For women without estrogen, many of us will experience, you know, reduced vision and suffer from something called macular degeneration, which is a form of blindness, and it's the most common form for women without estrogen. So as we grow older, we're susceptible to that. And then, of course, there are all the wonderful cosmetic benefits of having pretty skin and nice hair and nail health that I don't discount, frankly. It's not just about being, you know, pretty. It's about feeling good about yourself, right? So none of us are trying to win the Miss America contest, but wouldn't it be nice if we felt good about how we looked? So that goes, you know, that you talk about estrogen for women who are symptomatic. It's excellent for vaginal health. It's excellent for all the other reasons I spoke about. And the one issue I want your listeners to clearly know about is the progesterone component of hormone therapy is needed if you have a uterus. So for all your listeners who've had a hysterectomy, all you would need is estrogen. And for all your listeners who have a uterus, you would also need to take a progesterone to protect the lining of the uterus from this estrogen that's doing great things for your body, but it also can grow the lining of the uterus into an abnormally fluffy pattern called hyperplasia, and we don't want that to happen. So you would have to also take a progesterone to keep that one issue from happening. So, you know, sometimes women will say, can I take progesterone for hot flashes? No. Progesterone is not meant to treat hot flashes. Progesterone only has one job, and that is to protect the uterus from hyperplasia or cancer. It's the estrogen that will treat those symptoms. And again, there's so many ways to take it, by a tablet, by a patch, by a cream, by a spray, by a ring. You can take it systemically where it's treating the whole of you. You can take it locally where it's just helping the vagina. And I would say we should probably talk about the biggest fear that women have about estrogen, which is the fear of breast cancer. Okay. And to make that so crystal clear for your listeners, we women, as we grow older, do have a risk of breast cancer because we have breasts. Breast cancer is usually a disease of older breasts. So as our breasts get older, our risk of breast cancer increases. When you add estrogen therapy to the mixture, you do change your breast cancer risk, but you change it in such a tiny, tiny way. I like to liken it to when you take a plane ride. You actually have a risk of dying in a plane crash when you take a plane ride. But by the way, the risk is very tiny, and most of us will still take the plane ride because we have places to go and people to see. So the risk of breast cancer is so small for most women, and the time frame for the breast cancer is not until after 5 years of use does this tiny, tiny risk enter the picture. So women can safely use estrogen for less than 5 years and not have to worry about breast cancer. So I say to my women, let's not worry about breast cancer for the most part right now as we start estrogen, and who knows, you might be on it 1 year or 2 years and then we're done. So the fear of breast cancer, which is so small and looms in the future, should not dissuade us from trying to have a quality of life that many of us cannot have as we transition through menopause.
All right. So what would be the time when you would no longer need to take estrogen?
That's a good question, and I always tell my patients, let me find my crystal ball, because the answer is lying inside of it. I would say how it should be managed is every 1 year you go back to your smart gynecologist and you try to lower doses, right? Wouldn't it be great to manage whatever the symptoms are on the lowest possible dose? And once you get to the very lowest dose available, you can stop. And if you stop and feel okay, well, then you're okay. And if you stop and you feel lousy, then you should go back on and try next year to see if you can stop. So it's a trial by error. Every woman is different. Some women need their hormone therapy for 1 year. Some women need their hormone therapy for 20 years. And we don't know who you're going to be. So we have to figure it out as we go.
All right. Well, are there other medical solutions that we would also be needing to talk to our smart gynecologist, or or our...
I like to call them menopausally friendly gynecologists. They're, you know, not every woman can or will take estrogen. So for those women who cannot, there are some other strategies that you can try. Low-dose antidepressants have been shown to be helpful with the management of hot flashes and mood symptomatology. They won't, however, help with sexual dysfunction issues, low libido, low interest, difficulty with orgasm, and so forth. Here's another distinction. Oh, I guess I should mention to your listeners about black cohosh. That would be the only one herbal, I don't even want to say medicine, or herbal choice that mm-hmm. might be effective for some women, and the only one brand that I think I can recommend to your listeners is one called Remifemin, which has the right amount of black cohosh in it. And for those women who do not want to use estrogen, who cannot use estrogen, you can most certainly try a low-dose antidepressant or even try Remifemin first, which you can purchase in your local health food store or pharmacy. And the caveat here is that if it doesn't work after 3 months, it's not going to. So about 30% of women will get some relief, let's say, from black cohosh. But remember, when you go into your health food store and it says, I'm a menopausal treatment and I'm good for you, you have no idea what's in that box. The health food store remedies are not regulated by anyone anywhere. You have no idea that what's in the tablet is what they say is in the tablet. And so I would caution your listeners from, you know, buying into those late-night commercials talking about relief of menopausal symptoms that are not estrogen, because probably for the most part you're just buying nothing helpful, except mm-hmm. for black cohosh in the form of Remifemin, and otherwise you would things that you've heard of that might be helpful, Dong Quai, vitamin E, have not been shown to be helpful for women.
Okay. All right. Now,
we could just talk all day, couldn't we? And there's just so many topics to cover.
Absolutely. I'm trying to keep track of the clock here. I think I've got a couple more questions that I'd like to ask you before we open the call to take any questions from our listeners. One thing I really want to make sure that we don't fail to discuss is the concept of bioidentical. I mean, we've all heard Suzanne Summers talk about bioidentical, but I don't know that people really know what it means and whether that is safer or better. So I think you would be...
I love that. I love that question. And I love Dr. Suzanne Summers. That's what I call her, Dr. Suzanne Summers. She has raised quite a bit of controversy trying to make women feel or think that this bioidentical estrogen is safer and better, and therefore you must seek it out. So let your listeners know for once and for all that the word bioidentical is just a made-up marketing word, and it just means estradiol. Estradiol is the estrogen that your ovaries made. All of it is synthetic, none of it is natural, and it's no better, safer, or different than the estrogens that are offered in your pharmacy. The bioidentical ones that Dr. Suzanne Summers refers to, you must go to a fancy compounding pharmacy and they have to mix it up for you. I will caution your listeners, there are bioidentical estrogens, again, what it means is estradiol, that are FDA approved, and what that means is they have gone through rigorous scientific testing so that we know what their safety profile is and we know that they're effective. The bioidentical estrogens that are in your compounding pharmacy that are being mixed up by pharmacist Joe, you have no idea what's in there, and from batch to batch and from day to day, you can't be sure you're getting, again, what you're hoping to be getting. So it just doesn't make any sense to not get, if you've been swayed by the marketing term bioidentical, which just means estradiol, if you really, really in your heart believe that's what you want, then get an FDA-approved one. That you have many choices in your pharmacy that are on your insurance plans. And there are other estrogens that are not estradiol, and they're just as safe and effective. So this whole brouhaha over bioidenticals should really be a non-issue at this point.
Good to know. Now, in addition to discussions of estrogen and progesterone, we hear talk now and then about testosterone. So, you know, of course, the first time I ever heard of it, I thought, no, that's the men. But no, there are there are reasons where I'm hearing about it for women. So could we talk a little bit about that?
Yes, our ovaries have been very busy during our reproductive lives making estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And it is the testosterone that has been giving us our libido and our energy and our sense of well-being. And it's also been very protective of our bones. And when our ovaries stop making estrogen around the age of 51, they are still, by the way, making testosterone for about 5 more years. So in our mid-50s, we also stop making testosterone, and that is when many women begin to experience a reduction in libido. We experience a reduction in libido before then because we're exhausted, we're caring for children, and lives are busy, and it's very stressful. But the testosterone at least has been helpful in helping us achieve orgasm, and without the testosterone that we used to make, having an orgasm is harder to do. It is not nearly as intense as it used to be. And so I really help women understand we will never be the sexual beings that we once were. We can't possibly be, not without the levels of estrogen and testosterone that we made. And some of us will benefit postmenopausally with a little bit of testosterone if our sexual function is very important to us, and let's say we have an active partner who is interested. Look, it becomes a problem for all of us as we women grow older. We have our partners now experiencing erectile dysfunction, but when we have active partners who are interested in sex and it's distressing to us, the addition of testosterone can be helpful with issues of sexual function and libido. And the issue of using local estrogen therapy in the vagina, so important if we want to have non-painful sex. You can't possibly have sex if it hurts. No one will have a libido, and you'll never want to have sex again. So you really do have to address vaginal health on a number of different levels. But the issue of testosterone is not for everybody, but it is for some people. And there's a category of women, the surgically menopausal woman. If you're, let's say, a 40-something or maybe even a 30-something, and you've had to have your ovaries removed surgically for whatever reason, now all of a sudden you're thrust into menopause early and your testosterone has been taken away abruptly, and those women are excellent candidates for testosterone. Testosterone is, again, not for everybody, but it is for some people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I know that there are risks and benefits to hormone therapy. Have you covered all of them, or are there other benefits?
I should clarify what the fears are from women. Breast cancer, I think we covered. The risk is extremely small, and it's after 5 years of use. I don't spend a minute worrying about women in breast cancer due to estrogen therapy. Most of the women in this country who get breast cancer are not on hormone therapy. So it's a very tiny percentage of women, and most of us will die from heart disease, you know, many, many fold more. So I don't spend a lot of time worrying about breast cancer and hormone therapy. I would like to say that, you know, women fear a little bit heart disease. Mm-hmm. Because they think that the estrogen is going to cause heart disease, and that's actually not true. If you use your estrogen therapy for the right reasons and early on, it's very protective of hearts. It's very protective of brains. It doesn't cause Alzheimer's disease or dementia if you use it early on. You want your healthy brain tissue, your healthy heart tissue, and your healthy bone tissue to see your estrogen early on as a late 40-something, early 50-something. If you want to wait till you're a 65-year-old girl and then start introducing estrogen, that's when you get into trouble. So the Women's Health Initiative helped illuminate the fact that if you're an older woman, it's a bad time to start estrogen. If you're a younger woman, on the other hand, the benefits are very clear. So everybody listening to your show should not fear it if they're symptomatic, and they will find somebody smart to help them understand their choices, and they will take it 1 year at a time and, you know, try to use the lowest possible doses for just the right amount of time that they need to. And okay. In terms of, you know, the other risks that are listed always, if you read the package insert, you will read about stroke, you will read about blood clots, and these are very, very rare. Again, tantamount to dying in a plane crash, so I don't spend a lot of time worrying about them, and neither should your listeners.
All right. Now, would you say that everyone would benefit from hormone therapy, or is that hormone therapy only something that we would look at if we're having challenges with our perimenopause or menopause?
Well, I think the indication for the use of hormone therapy is for the woman who's having some, you know, significant enough symptoms that disrupt her quality of life. So I guess it's a more interesting question to say, if you're a perfectly normal feeling woman who's stopped having her periods, but you're not having flashes or sweats or mood issues or cognitive issues or sexual function issues or anything, should you also take hormone therapy? Because it's protective of bones and heart and colon and vision and skin and all kinds of things. And it's a very interesting and somewhat controversial question. I probably fall on the side of, you know, a low-dose estrogen will be helpful to protect some of these important organs early on. I don't think if you're not symptomatic at this point in life, though, that you should seek hormone therapy. There are other ways to protect your heart and your bones and so forth. But it's an interesting question that gets debated all the time.
All right. Excellent. Well, I think that I'm looking at my clock here and wanting to keep us to the hour that we promised people the call would be. I think it would be a good time here to open up the call and let our listeners ask you some of their questions. If there are people that are hesitating to jump in and ask a question, I've got some that have been sent in to me in advance here. So we can say anybody would like to jump in and ask a question, please do. Otherwise, I'll go to my list here. So the line is open. Jump in if you've got a question, any of your callers, of your listeners. All right. Well, then I'm going to start with getting the ball rolling here with some of the questions that have come in. I have a question from Colleen in Meridian, Idaho, and she says, what is your opinion of HGH for menopausal women?
Human growth hormone is what HGH is. In my opinion, as menopausal women should not take it. I'm not sure. Did that come from Dr. Suzanne Summers, possibly? There's no indication.
No,
it's not.
Well, I don't know where the woman who asked the question is named Colleen, and she's
No, Idaho. I'm just wondering how she even heard about it.
Oh,
it's
I don't
not,
know.
It's not standard of care. It has no place in women's health care, and it most certainly won't help with menopausal symptoms.
All right. Let's see. We've got here Sharon from Hinton, Alberta, and she says, I have not had a period for over a year and a month, and then had a period again that lasted a week. Should I be concerned? Is this quite usual?
Well, the definition of menopause is not having a period for 1 year, 12 months in a row, no menstrual cycle, and then lo and behold, there's one little remaining egg who pops out and ovulates, and there's your period. I don't think you need to be concerned. I think you're a menopausal. Congratulations, and welcome to the club.
Okay. I've got a question here from Kim in New York City. She says, what can you do for vaginal dryness without using drugs?
Well, that's a good question. There are vaginal moisturizers that you can use, which are different than vaginal lubricants. So the moisturizers will moisturize the cells in the vagina, and the lubricants will just make the cells slippery. And you probably need a combination of both, the vaginal moisturizer, and you would use the vaginal lubricant when you're wanting to have intercourse. And basically, those are your choices. By the way, ladies, the act of intercourse, whether you're using your partner or you're just using a vibrator, which I wholeheartedly recommend and, in fact, is a homework assignment for my patients, once a week masturbation and or use with a vibrator, because what it does is bring blood to the vagina, which improves the health of the vagina. And so, you know, it's one of those things where if you don't use it, you lose it. So if you don't have a partner or you don't like your partner or you don't want a partner, then you can partner with yourself, and it's a once-a-week homework assignment.
Excellent.
Those are the things you can do that are not estrogen-related.
Okay. I've got another question here from Karen in Los Angeles, and I think you may have covered this a little bit already, but I'll ask it so that we can make sure you've covered it as clearly as she's asking it. She says, do you recommend bioidentical hormones? If so, do you prefer transdermal estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone creams or oral supplementation for hormone replenishment?
I think if you're a young menopausal woman, your choices, without any interesting risk of stroke or blood clot, your choices are endless. You can have tablets, you can have patches, and you can have creams. I like bioidentical hormones, and all that means is the estrogen is estradiol, and I like them when they're FDA approved. I don't like them when I have to go to a compounding pharmacy where I have no idea what I'm getting, and neither do you. So if you wanted, but they're no safer or different, and they are synthetic. They're not natural. There's wonderful marketing going on, but they're all made from the same precursor. It's all synthesized. And there's nothing. It's not like women are smashing yams in the back room, and you're getting a natural plant estrogen put into a tablet or a cream for you. So I do like bioidenticals. I like all the estrogens that are FDA approved, which means they have passed all their scientific study tests. And depending on the woman, sometimes a patch is better, sometimes a cream is better, sometimes a pill is better. You really got to suss that out with each person.
All right. Well, I don't want to just keep talking here, so I'm going to say once again, anybody who's listening, please just speak up, and the lines are open. You can ask a question, and we'll be happy to give you an answer.
And listeners, we're so lonely, so don't be shy. If you're listening...
Right.
We want to hear from you.
And I know you're there. I can see you. So.
Okay. Well, I have a question.
Oh, can you hear me? Talk. Well, meanwhile, one more question from our audience here is, could you talk a little bit about what is libido? And the question actually is, where is my libido?
Where is it? It has gone. The libido has left the house. Libido is a function of our estrogen and testosterone that we made in abundance as younger cycling women. And when we stop making estrogen, we're still making testosterone for about 5 more years. But somewhere in our mid-50s, we stopped making the testosterone too. And it is the source of our libido, right? So it is the thing that, for women, our sex organ really is our brain. And without the estrogen and the testosterone, it's very hard to feel libidinous.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have to work a lot harder to have those experiences. And local estrogen will help vaginally. Systemic estrogen and or testosterone will help with our brain function. And, you know, just paying a bit of attention to our partners and our needs. Communication with your partner is going to be very helpful. And you will never have the libido that you had as a younger person. So you don't need to mourn the loss of it. You just have to know this is the normal for menopausal women. And if we have a partner who initiates, for instance, many of us don't even feel like initiating anymore or could care less about sex. But if we have a partner that initiates and it doesn't hurt us, it's not painful because we've paid attention to vaginal health, usually most women will experience pleasure. Again, orgasms are harder to have. Their intensity is diminished, and as long as we understand that, you know, and forgive ourselves a bit, not beat ourselves up about that, we can still have, you know, sex lives and enjoyable ones.
Excellent. That sounds like good news for all of us. Now, I've got a couple more questions here. Questions having to do with, do I need a mammogram and a pap smear every year? You said something earlier that indicated to me that probably the answer is yes, but I'll let you answer
that. When you get to be an older woman, your risk of breast cancer does increase. So the issue of mammograms for the 40 to 50-year-old crowd has come under some scrutiny. Can you skip a year? I won't go into the rationale for why that is, but you probably can skip a year as a 40 to 50-year-old woman, so every other year for you. But as a 50-year-old and above, every year is still the right recommendation. Because if you find that breast cancer early, you will make a difference in your long-term survival rate. So that's a good idea. And regarding pap smears, you, as an older woman, you are less at risk for cervical cancer. That is the reason you're getting pap smears done. But you're more at risk for vaginal and vulvar cancer and other issues of the vagina. So you don't necessarily have to have the pap smear every year, but you still have to see the gynecologist every year. So I think it doesn't get explained well that skipping the pap smear does not mean skipping the gynecology visit. You can get away with less frequent pap smears, but you still need someone to look in your vagina every year.
Other issues of the vagina. So you don't necessarily have to have the pap smear every year, but you still have to see the gynecologist every year. So I think it doesn't
have someone from Boise, Idaho, who I think we're getting reverb. So I'm going to mute you unless you have a question.
I do have a question. I'm trying to back away from my computer.
Okay. Go ahead, then.
Can you ask her, Can you ask her to talk a little bit more about heart disease? As she said, it was the number one reason that we die.
Half a million of us will die every year. 500,000 women will die of heart disease every year, and maybe 30,000 will die of breast cancer. And the numbers are increasing for women. And the reason why you rarely hear about women having heart attacks in their 40s and 50s is because our hearts are protected by the estrogen we've been making. And once we stop making estrogen as menopausal women, we finally get equal rights with those men vis-a-vis heart disease. And those are not the equal rights we've been seeking all of our lives. So we are now prone to heart attacks, bad cholesterol, atherosclerosis, and it's because we no longer have estrogen in our corner helping protect us. So it becomes so important and critical as perimenopausal, menopausal women to focus on heart health, which includes exercise and diet, and that's every day of the week, not just, you know, twice a week, be concerned about it. We have to be concerned every day.
And so the estrogen, how does that protect the heart and help with osteoporosis?
Estrogen is very kind to our hearts in the following way. It works. It does very nice things to the arteries. So it helps reduce the plaque formation. The plaque is what clogs up the arteries and leads us to having our heart attacks. It also has a nice benefit on cholesterol. So it improves the good one and reduces the bad one. And it also has other mechanisms as an anti-inflammatory. It's very complicated what it does in the heart, but it is clearly protective of the heart when the heart sees that estrogen early on and not later on. So if you're remote from menopause, it won't be helpful, and you're right around menopause, it will be helpful. And as far as osteoporosis goes, which is a completely preventable epidemic in this country, estrogen prevents bone loss, and once we stop making our own estrogen, we will start losing our bones, some of us very rapidly, especially in the first couple of years after menopause. And if we're not mindful of bone health, then we are going to be facing osteoporosis and fracture. There's more than a million fractures every year, and if you're unlucky enough to have a hip fracture, you know, 50% of you won't survive that at all. You'll die from the hip fracture. So it's a major epidemic in the country, totally preventable.
So now, it might be worth it to get a bone density test.
That's an excellent question. I don't think insurance companies will pay for bone density tests in younger women. I believe that the age that they'll start paying for them is 65, unless you have a risk factor. And what risk factors would include: your mother has osteoporosis, you've already fractured something, in terms of risk factors, if you're thin and that's defined as less than 126 pounds, or you've had to take, you know, steroids, for instance, medications that would reduce bone. But most young 50-somethings do not need to get a baseline bone density. They need to start being smart with, here's a good teaching point for everybody. We need to start adding strength training into our exercise regimen. We need to start lifting weights, not heavy ones, light ones, but we actually need to do it where we never have before. Most women like the cardio, but we don't like the strength training, and that is an easy way to start maintaining bone health. And the other easy way is to make sure you're supplementing with calcium and vitamin D. And this is every day, not once in a while. So between strength training and calcium vitamin D, you can start improving your bone health. And, you know, your gynecologist will use their best judgment as to whether or not you need a baseline bone density. But most women do not need a baseline one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Now, as far as the calcium and vitamin D, would you say that, in addition to the multivitamin that has some calcium and vitamin D in it, that we should be taking additional calcium and vitamin D? Because I know I do, but sometimes I wonder if I'm overdoing it.
Yeah, I always tell my women to save their money on that multivitamin and just take the calcium and vitamin D, because most of us, unless we live in an impoverished area and do not have access to good nutrition, most of us do not need what's being offered in that multivitamin. We just will excrete it and not use it. So for most of us who have an adequate diet, a multivitamin is not helping. And the only exception to that rule is the calcium with vitamin D. None of us eat enough calcium. And the only way to get vitamin D is to sit in the sun and get a suntan. So we don't recommend that either, obviously, for protection of skin and reduction of skin cancer. So the easiest, best way to get your calcium and D supplementation is to take it in the form of a tablet. You can certainly Google, you know, foods rich in calcium, but I think you'll be disappointed to find that there's no way in the world you can get the amount of calcium that you need by trying to consume those foods. Most of us just simply can't do it. And, again, we don't recommend that you sit in the sun to get your vitamin D. So the recommendations for women are calcium 1,200 milligrams, vitamin D 1,000 international units, and we usually want you to split the dose, which means half of that in the morning and half of that later, which gives your stomach enough ability to absorb both of those doses. And then toss your multivitamin. You can finish it up, but don't spend hard-earned money if you have access to good nutrition.
Okay.
Anybody I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes. We can hear
you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Dr. Terry, you mentioned something about exercise earlier, and you've added a few little things here, but I have actually heard that strength isn't the main thing. Flexibility is, and flexibility will help you not fall and break a hip. So I'm wondering if it's enough to do yoga or Pilates, or if you have to be a runner, which is something I hate doing and will never do.
Well, I think running is just about the word. Yeah, let's all stop running because our knees and our lower backs will really be mad at us for the rest of their days. So running is not a good idea. Pilates and yoga are good ideas for flexibility, but you really actually have to add a little bit of weight, and I never suggest anything more than 5 pounds to your skeleton. Your skeleton has to lift more than nothing. So when I walk on the treadmill, for instance, and I never run, I walk on an incline and I hold 2 5-pound weights, so I'm walking up a hill, and I do that for 45 minutes. So I'm doing both cardio and strength training, and it's the actual putting of extra weight, the 10 pounds that I'm carrying, are increasing my bone mass, and that is why it's not enough to do the yoga and Pilates for bone health. It's helpful, and it's not enough. You're right. You want to be flexible, and you have to add the weights to the scenario in order to improve bone health.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? All right.
I did just think of another one. Do we still have time?
Sure. We're still time. I've got time to...
Yes, okay. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Is there any contraindication after menopause for getting something that younger women usually get, like breast implants, facelift, that kind of thing? Is it more dangerous medically to do it later? Should you do it before menopause when your skin has more elasticity? Or should you wait?
I spend my whole career talking women out of breast implants, so I'm certainly not going to recommend them after menopause. They make all those great bras, ladies, as we all know, that put everything where it's supposed to be. Implants are a bad idea, especially as you grow older, and not because of, you know, skin health and elasticity, but rather older breasts are the ones that are at risk for breast cancer. You don't want to mask a breast cancer because you've put an implant in. So I just think if you get to a certain age and you've made it without needing an implant, just get one of those bras that push everything where you want to be pushed. And regarding facelifts, as I grow older, I'm less judgmental about cosmetic surgery. If that is something that makes you feel better and healthier and happier, then I am all for it. I just caution women to, you know, do some good research on who's doing that surgery for them so that they don't look like, you know, over facelifted.
My question is about really the difference between doing it younger or older. There are lots of considerations from lots of perspectives, but regarding
all surgery is safer as a younger person with younger lungs and younger hearts.
Okay.
The biggest risk of surgery is anesthesia. And so we are more prone, you know, the biggest risk of surgery is death from anesthesia. So, you know, younger people are less at risk and older people are more at risk. And so I find elective surgeries are less of a good idea when our hearts are older and our lungs are older. And can't think of any good reason to have implants as a menopausal woman, unless you want to become a swimsuit model as a menopausal woman. That's the only reason I can think of.
Anyone else with questions? Well, Dr. Tara, it's been great talking to you today. I thank you for your time and for being my guest and for the wonderful discussion that you've had with us on how we can manage menopause. I want to make sure.
I certainly appreciate it. We forgot to mention to the ladies about the man video, right? So Menopause in an Hour is for women, and I made a man video to help your men learn a little bit about it. We made it very humorous, and I think it's so important to also teach our men a little bit about this topic so they can be more helpful to us.
Absolutely. I was going to make sure that I reminded people that your DVD, Menopause in an Hour, An Appointment with Dr. Tara Allman, MD, has two DVDs in it, and as you've been saying, the first one is Menopause in an Hour. The second one is called What's Up with You Know Who, which I believe that's the one you're calling the man video.
And, that's right.
Having watched it, I can tell everyone who's listening that it is a wonderful product. I'm so glad that you created it for all of us, and it is available in many places, Amazon.com, Target.com, Barnes & Noble Online, which is BN.com. It's at DVDPlanet.com and MoviesUnlimited.com. Is there any other place?
And MenopauseInAnHour.com.
MenopauseInAnHour, that's right. And in addition to the two DVDs, it's got the very helpful Symptoms and Solutions Guide. And if you are lucky, the first 10 people that went and signed up for this call will be getting a copy of it. But if you are not lucky enough to be one of those 10 people that get a free copy, those are wonderful places to go find it. And I can't recommend it enough. It is an excellent product. It answered so many questions. And also, you mentioned, of course, the last place that you mentioned, menopauseinanhour.com, which is your website. So there's good information on that site, too.
Great. Well, this has been so much fun, Anne. I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk to your listeners today.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to fit us into your schedule, and it's been wonderful. And I want to thank everyone for joining us. And at this point, I'm going to say goodbye, and I will end the call. Thank you, everyone.
Good luck, everybody. Thanks. Bye, Anne.
Bye.